G'day folks, and welcome to Stick With It, APA's podcast for its pilots. Thanks for becoming part of a growing following of members tuning in to learn more about various aspects of APA and to become more engaged with what we are offering you. Today we are going to provide some insight into how the consultative groups work with the company to address many of the concerns that arise in a general day-to-day operation. We are well aware of the frustrations that many of you are experiencing at the moment, so today we hope to explain the process from an APA perspective. Joining me today are your reps at the coalface from our long-haul consultative group, Captain Brad Hodgson and First Officer John Pavlo. Welcome, Brad and John.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Now, I'd like to start with the origin of the issues that come up that you then liaise with the company on to try and find some resolutions. So how are issues normally brought to your attention?
They come through a number of avenues, Mark. We have a lot of queries that come through the APA email and then forwarded on to the relative portfolios. So if it's a long-haul issue, then the long-haul team will get an email from the office with the associated issue. But a lot of the time you get queries from pilots just out on the line that raise issues with you directly because they know that you're with APA, or through the emails directly to the particular con member.
Okay. And that's office@apa.org.au?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if our members have an issue and don't see you in the coffee shop or pub up line, what is the best way to get in touch with you? I'm assuming, sorry, we've just said that, that the APA email is the best way?
Generally, yeah, because what happens is that the office staff can then triage the particular issue and decide. It may be a FRMS issue, could be a long-haul, short-haul issue, or some other department such as welfare.
Yeah, I think the important thing there is what happens then is a case is created, so then it's tracked, and when there's a resolution to that, then the case is actually closed. It will remain open, and then we can trace it to ensure that, you know, sometimes issues are resolved quickly, other times they can go on longer, just depending on, you know, the complexity of the case.
Okay. Now, is it valuable if our members have a go at trying to deal with their respective issue first, such as a payroll query, you know, and if they then still don't get a resolution, is that then the best time to get in touch with the consultative reps in their relevant short-haul or long-haul group?
I think so. I think if you, in the first instance, speak to the remuneration team, say, for example, if it's a payroll issue, you then get a response from them about why they've done what they've done. If the answer isn't satisfactory, then at least we have both perspectives on what the particular issue is and we can deal with it from there.
Yeah, the information is important, so you want to get the response from payroll. The payroll response you might then challenge, you might think that that's not consistent with the words in the EA, then that may get escalated to the consultative committee. So the information's important.
Okay. So if an issue has now made its way to you, can you explain to our members the process that is established for APA to raise these issues with the company?
Generally what happens is, if it's an office email, for example, it'll get triaged to the relevant portfolios. John said, so if it comes to long haul, one of us will then take the case, generate an email normally. So if it's you know, going to be weeks before the consultative, we'll send an email normally to the base ops team, Esther or Doug, generally Esther, to raise the issue. We might seek further information or resolution, just depending on what the case is. A lot of the times those things are resolved between long-haul consultative meetings. If they're not and we don't like the answer, then we might put it onto the agenda to formalise the matter.
Right. So you have a meeting. How often are these meetings?
Usually scheduled to be monthly. We've just aligned our long-haul consultative meetings for week one and week five of the 8-week period. And that usually gives us the opportunity to discuss issues with rostering, because it aligns with when the rosters are published and also as we're approaching the bidding period.
Right. How often, who usually attends these meetings?
From APA, there's normally two pilots, so normally be John, myself, there might be additional pilots. Glenn Hunter attends, Rod Duncan does a lot of the A380 issues. APA scheduling, so Bob and Dave who take all the scheduling calls, because there's obviously different compartments. From the company, it's normally Doug Alley, Esther from Base Ops, and then there's people from workforce planning allocations, so the people who actually build the rosters are also there. So there's about four from each side.
Okay. And are the meetings minuted, or are they sort of informal or formal? How would you sort of, in terms of follow-up, How is stuff logged to ensure that it's followed up?
It's been quite difficult coming through COVID. There was a lot more sort of informal stuff through COVID, but the process itself, the meetings are generally informal, but there's always an agenda. There's minutes, agreed positions out of the consultative committee. If people agree on that, they're binding and they'll form part of, you know, maybe the next DA. I'll give you an example. So, you know, the recent All Packs transfer, it's a bit controversial. At the end of the pattern, when there's no extra cost, that was agreed through the consultative. So it's not in the EA, but there was a flight standing order put out about that. The company recently came back and said, look, we can't do this anymore because of staffing levels, but it's a temporary thing. So they're, you know, what they're basically saying is, look, you know we've agreed to this in the past, but we just can't do it at present. That's an example of basically how outcomes flow out of the committee, if you like.
Right. And obviously, though, as you said before, you still liaise with the company more than just those monthly meetings. There's obviously contact happening on a, not a daily basis, but obviously on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, it's daily. Right. It's daily. So whether it's, you know, it depends on the individual or whatever, but whether it's emails, texts, phone calls, it's generally daily depending on what's going on. So.
And it's more productive to give them a heads up if there is a particular issue, even to give them time to formulate their response and come to us at consultative. So there's no point hanging on to an issue for a couple of weeks until the consultative.
Okay. And then when those outcomes are reached, how is this information communicated to the impacted member or the wider pilot group if any issue impacts a larger cohort?
Broad issues, you will have seen responses in insights from either the long-haul team or from Tony. Where it's an individual pilot issue, either via email, but I tend to prefer to call the affected pilot if I have a resolution for them and tell them in person what the outcome is.
Yeah, and as I said, other issues, as I said with the allowance, they go out by standing order. So if there's things of you know greater substance, they'll go through the company channels as well.
Okay. Now, you've just given us that example with regard to the transport. Are there any other examples where an issue's been raised by a member that you've been able to resolve, either, I guess, at a micro or a macro level, you know, impacting one member or maybe the wider pilot community?
Look, at a micro level, there's a number of issues that will get resolved over the phone, which I won't go into details because things happen and relationships are important. Bigger picture stuff, take, for example, coming out of COVID and going back to the full 8-week bid period. That took a fair bit of time to get back to 8 weeks. Cabin crew are still on 4 weeks. Networks are still planning 4-week rosters, but the driver for that was basically that, you know, pilots couldn't see what was going on to the rosters. The information provided to them was incorrect. It created an enormous amount of work for both the company and APRA as well. So I think at the end of the day, the company really did realise that they needed, as well as the pilots needed, some certainty to that.
Okay. Now, I know that there's a large degree of frustration around the delays in the return to business as usual following the pandemic, be it bidding timelines, wait times, calling crewing, transport issues, both all packaging and vehicle transport. So can you give our members your take on the likelihood of these issues being rectified by the company and the timeframes associated with some of the bigger ticket items?
I think it's likely to be rectified. The difficulty is the timeline. We've asked them numerous times for a timeline of when they plan to go back. We can't get an answer. I don't think they're withholding it for any other reason is that they don't know and they're uncertain. What I can say is that the way it's been run at the moment costs the company a significant amount of money. So if pilots think about short lines, and it's an issue that we get a lot of queries about, the APRA rostering reps clearly say that they're burning a lot of cash by having all those short lines because they want the operational flexibility at the time. What's going to happen, I would suggest at some time in the future, the company's going to say, we can't burn this cash anymore, and that will drive them back to a more pre-COVID level of getting their headcount and resources correct. And also the allocation staff and the people in the office doing the work are working weekends. It's just not an efficient way to do your business. It's just that at this particular point in time, they view it as the correct way in the circumstances.
Okay, so you do think that business as usual is something that they are going to take seriously at some point?
I think they are taking it seriously at the moment. They're making a conscious decision to spend money because they want the operational flexibility. We've had some different discussions and we'd hold a different view to that because we think they're basically chasing stability in an inherently unstable environment. So we really don't understand why they're doing it, because pilots, I think, would like more stability in their rosters, less short lines. However, as I said to you before, there is a cost there, so it really is a bit of perspective on how you view it, I suppose.
So do you think that, because obviously there's quite a long list of areas where their compliance with the EA is not happening to the level that we want, do you think that it's going to be just a incremental improvement in compliance?
I don't think that they're not complying with the EA. I think there's a bit of banter on the line where they say they're not complying with the EA. There's a few paxing issues,
right,
whatever, and they're difficult. But when it comes to rostering timelines and things like that, they aren't explicitly in the EA. There's a number of issues where we say they're not complying with consultation, providing information to us in a timely manner, but they're more grey than they are black and white non-compliance issues.
Right, okay. So is there anything our members can do to assist APA to press the case for a return to business as usual on all elements of the respective enterprise agreements?
What we really need for pilots to do is to tell us when there is non-compliance. And the best way to know when there's some sort of non-compliance with the agreement is to actually know the agreement. And if there's something, and the agreement's not an easy document to understand, and I'll admit from time to time that I've had to really read it quite intently to get the correct interpretation, call APA. We can give you an interpretation of the clause. If you feel that something's not quite right, come to us, speak to us, and we can tell you whether they're doing something that is outside the agreement or whether, in fact, they're actually conforming to it. And that's the big thing, an understanding of your own agreement.
Brad, anything to add there?
No, I think what John said is correct. Information is key, as is knowledge. And also, it's probably a bit of that learnt experience too. When you're sitting there and you think, whether it's someone from scheduling or whether you're sitting on the airplane, you go, well, hang on, this doesn't feel right. Have a look at your EA, and if you're unsure, particularly in an operational sense, call the APA scheduling number and just get some information and some help, because there's a number of times in my experience doing this job where pilots will ring and, are you sure this is right? Because it doesn't feel right. And that's the best time to seek advice. And to that end, it's important too that you're better off letting someone for APA ring the company and say, hang on, we don't think this is right, than probably having an argument with someone yourself. It's a better way to get a result.
Okay. I agree, you know, the EAs are daunting documents. Do you guys have any, I guess, tips on how best to find stuff in it? I mean, is it literally just using the search function with some keywords and that's how you drive yourself into it? I mean, are there particular points or elements of the documents that are more relevant to pilots in day-to-day ops than you know, sort of, I guess, pay scales? But is there more day-to-day stuff that's important?
One of the things I have come across in the past is that, and particularly with a move to FRMS, is that some pilots, especially our more junior pilots, are not aware that there are actually two sets of planning rules for flight time limitations. There's their statutory, their regulatory ones, which is our FRMS system that Qantas puts out. And they don't realise that there are some subtle differences between that and what's in the EA, which is their contractual obligation. So I think one of the key parts of the agreement to understand is what you can be rostered to, and then understanding that when you go outside of that, that becomes your choice. And when you move into something that differs between the FRMS and the agreement, it's up to you whether you accept that change or not. Mm-hmm. That's an important part of the document to understand. Another one probably to understand is that one which we've had recent issues with, which is the all packs and transport arrangement, but understanding what the clauses actually say, and they're a little bit different to what actually happened in practice. And so when pilots aren't getting what they used to get, the natural inference is that they're not complying with the EA. But if they do go into the document and read it, they'll have a better understanding of what it actually says.
Yeah, there was during COVID, they were a lot more liberal than what they allowed pilots to do, particularly, you know, when people in domicile and things like that and work, they just allow you to pax anywhere and do a lot of things. So there is a bit of going back to business as usual there, whatever, and like a lot of things, trying to put the whole show back on the road completely.
Yep.
The other one, to John's point, is probably about availability. And when you're patent protected and you contact, there's a number of things in the rostering manual, which is Pilot 101, when you have to answer the phone, when you have to accept a duty, all those type of things are important. And again, if you're unsure or you can't find it, whatever, ring Bob and Dave, ring those guys or ring one of us, whatever, because it's helpful and it probably saves an argument at some point.
So basically, despite the fact that they're both lengthy documents, it's kind of, there's lots of other documents that we read that are long in being part of a pilot, and obviously the EA is one that you also need to get your head around. So just to remind our members, at what point should a member involve APRA in an issue, and what is the best way to make contact with us?
I think once they've tried the resolution process through the company, have been unsuccessful or not satisfied with it, at that point, then they should definitely come to us and we can advise them.
Okay. And Brad, what's the email again, or just remind us?
office@apra.org.au. And if it's an operational issue and you're on the aeroplane or something, ring the APRA scheduling number. That's 24, so it doesn't have to be a scheduling issue. If you're unsure about what's going on and you want some support, ring that number.
Okay. So is there anything else you guys would like to add to this discussion about the consultative groups?
I think, I've been involved with long haul and short haul. I know there's issues at the moment, but historically they've functioned well. There's a lot of resolutions that come from there. They create relationships. A lot of the time, the best way to get a result is who it goes to. And I think that's where it's good for the pilot to try to get a resolution. But if it's not going anywhere, it's easier then to pick up the phone, send an email to us so we can go, okay, we have some experience in dealing with these issues, depending on what it is. If it's payroll, that's fundamentally different to a scheduling problem. It's fundamentally different to if someone's trying to get some days off, whatever. Where those issues go is really important into the timeline of getting it resolved. And we understand, obviously, that, it can be frustrating, and it's obviously been frustrating in the last few years through COVID and then trying to put the whole thing back together. We totally understand that.
And it strikes me as well, I guess, given that we're the recruitment phase that's going on, it's for our new members that are obviously, as I said, grappling with the business of just getting online, that there is support from APRA. If, there's something in the contract which you've read and maybe you've read it 10 times and you're still not completely sure, that then getting in contact with us, that's what we're here for, to help you understand your agreement better and then to obviously help you with resolutions if they're required.
Absolutely.
So thanks again to Brad and John for their time today. Your efforts in trying to help ensure the day-to-day issues impacting our members are dealt with is much appreciated, so thank you. That's it for today's chat. Don't forget to get in touch with the podcast with feedback and ideas via office@apra.org.au, and don't forget to put podcast in the subject line. We'll be back with another episode soon. In the meantime, fly safe and stick with it.